I don't want to say the Clippers aren't championship material, but they're going to have to account for the fact that James Harden and big games in the playoffs doesn't come through. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top. Yo, 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 what's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Sports and the Real Shit podcast. My name is Mike Philman, for those who are new around here. Appreciate you joining me as always. YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever. Thanks as always for listening. So let's jump right into another great episode I got lined up. We'll start with the NBA first. NBA has been kind of exciting this year. I ain't going to lie to y'all. Y'all know me, right? For those who've been here a couple episodes, I complained pretty much all last season about the fact that people like me have a hard time watching the NBA nowadays because it's just a struggle. Dudes ain't playing no defense. You know, it's like a LA fitness run most of the time. And, you know, the rules have changed and made it so soft, so on and so forth, right? And even in my NBA season preview, I talked about the fact that one of the ways the NBA can fix, you know, to viewership, can improve viewership is by allowing more defense, you know, making it tougher for guys to score, allowing dudes to get into each other, you know, to make it more competitive, more spirited, more competition. And they listen to me. I don't think they're calling more fouls or anything or less fouls or anything like that. But the dudes have certainly been balling this year. The young boys have been balling. And I appreciate that. As someone who grew up, you know, watching these guys compete, you know, 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. Like, we don't want to go back to where there is no scoring and games were ending 60 to 70, 65 to 70. We don't want to go back to that, for sure. But we also don't want the opposite end where there is literally no defense being played and cats are just coming down and jacking up step backs. But that hasn't been the case for the most part this year. Games have been super competitive. Even the teams that don't play no defense are fun to watch. Like the Pacers play zero defense. The Indiana Pacers play no defense. But Tyrese Haliburton has been having an amazing season. They score a lot of points. They beat you by outscoring you. They ain't going to stop you. So if you ain't been watching the NBA season, I recommend that you jump on it, man. Find a way to jump on it. If you're an NBA fan and the last couple of years you just ain't been watching, you've been lax on it or for whatever reason, jump on the NBA, man, right now. Like with or without this in-season tournament thing that they came up with. Like dudes have been really, you know, they've been really competing. And I've been enjoying it, man. I really have. I must say, like, every night, like, there's some competitive stuff going on, right? Despite the storylines, right, or whatever the case may be. NBA's been awesome early part of the season. So I want to shout out the boys for making it happen. Maybe they listened to the podcast. They heard me. So we'll stay there with the NBA. Best teams in the East. I'll say the Celtics, they got the best record. They're the most balanced team, even though they just lost a tough game to the Hornets. How do you look to the Hornets, man? The ever-tanking Hornets. No, but seriously, though, the Celtics got the most balanced team. Again, that Jrue Holiday trade, they're stable. I like what I'm seeing with KP and filling his role. Jason Tatum is doing his thing. One thing I must say is Jaylen Brown in that contract, he hasn't lived up to it. I know that's just the way of the world now. That's just the landscape, right? Cats, as they come up for contracts, they're going to be getting paid boku dollars. But as just an observer, outside observer, non-Celtics fan, I like the Celtics, but Jaylen Brown hasn't lived up to that contract at all. It's still inconsistent. I just expect more. And I don't know if more is there or if it can come out. Let me say it differently. I know more is there. The kid is ultra athletic, ultra talented. I don't know if it can come out. At one point, I thought he had more dog in him than Jason Tatum. I may be wrong on that. If you take it back to the finals a couple years ago against Golden State, one would think that Jalen had more dog in him than Jason Tatum. But so far this season, I don't know if it's because of Porzingis being in there and Holiday, you know, they're still trying to figure things out. I haven't seen that dog in this cat that I know that's in there that he's shown before, but it's not consistent. So right now, that contract looks crazy. Like, he's getting paid a lot of money. I don't know if he's living up to it. If I were a Celtics fan, I would be concerned about that. But the season's still young. There's still people still adjusting. On another note, the Sixers, right, they're still up there. They're still a really, really good team, despite the fact that they lost James Harden. I don't know if people thought they would still be that good. They're really that good. And the reason they're that good is because Tyrese Maxey is like that. Tyrese Maxey is, I don't know if there are 5 point guards right now who I would take ahead of Tyrese Maxey. He is fast as hell, quick, handles, shot, finishes in the paint tough. He ain't flopping around like, when he goes to the bucket, he goes, like, with bad intentions. He's going to score, man. He's not going up there to flippity-flop. Like, you got to challenge him. You got to block his shot. And he's crafty. He knows how to draw contact. Like, this cat is a total package. I don't know if there are 5 PGs playing right now who I would take above Tyrese Maxey. That's the God-honest truth, man. Yes, some will say, well, he's not, you know, in the number one spot because, you know, he's playing next to the process, Joel Embiid. That's true. He's not, you know, everything's not on his shoulders. That's true. But, man, in his role offensively, Tyrese Maxey is unstoppable. 5 guys I would take ahead of Tyrese Maxey right now. Let me think about it. Steph Curry, Dame Lillard. De'Aaron Fox out in Sacramento is having an amazing season. This guy is a monster. Nobody could stay in front of him. Fox and maybe Trey? Maybe not. And Tyrese Maxey. At this point, Tyrese Maxey is top 4 or 5 at worst. All right? He is legit. So the Sixers lost Harden. And Tyrese Maxey has made this joint seamless. All right, he's not out here dribbling, you know, 30 dribbles and all that in a step back. Like, he gets to his move and he gets there quickly. And he usually ends up with positive results, man. I really enjoy watching this cat. I really, really do. So yeah, I think Tyrese Maxey's top 5 right now, and he's surging, right? While Steph and Dame on the decline, right? Trey's been here. Trey's a more of a veteran. Fox is more of a veteran. This cat Maxey, man. Maxey and Halliburton, really. That's the next wave of PGs right there in the NBA. But, yeah, in Eastern Conference, man, pretty good teams at the top. Going to the West real quick. T-Wolves got the best record. Again, if you ain't been watching, you'll be surprised that the Timberwolves have the best record in the West right now. And that's because they have the best defense. And I've watched several other games. They are defensively, they're legit. They clam. Everybody knows about Ant-Man. Anthony Edwards is like that. Don't need to go into detail about him. He still takes bad shots, right? Ant could be better, right? But he's young. But everybody knows Ant-Man. What I'm surprised by, you know, the fact that their defense is so high is the fact that I'm used to Carl Anthony Towns being like a cone. And he's competing now. When I watch Cat now, who's ultra talented on offense, when I watch Carl Anthony Towns now, I'm like, this dude looks like somebody who's competing. In the past, when you watched the Minnesota Timberwolves, Cat was out there. He was out there. Now there is intent when you watch Carl Anthony Towns play basketball. Offensively, there is intent. He He's going hard as hell. He's not just shooting J's. Like, he's going to the paint, trying to dunk on fools. And he's always had that game, but now it's more consistent. And I don't know who spoke with him or whatever, who's gotten into him, but he's playing like Carl Anthony Towns, like the talented guy who got, you know, whenever that year he came out, he was number one pick. He's the truth. So he's balling. He's not a cone on defense no more. He's competing. That's all I ask these dudes, man. Obviously, I never played in the NBA, but all I ask as a fan watching is to compete. And Kenny Smith has said, if you play hard every night, you'll win 50 games in the NBA. That's not me. That's Kenny Smith. Kenny Smith said, if you play hard every night in the NBA, you'll win 50 games off of effort. And the T-Wolves do that, man. And somehow they've gotten the Gobert and Cat, you know, thing to work. And they're clamping. And they look really good. I like that team. Another team I like watching. I really, really do. Best defense in the league. Who knew that would have ever worked? We'll see as the season goes along, though. The Nuggets are second place with the second best record. Of course, again, it's still early. And OKC has the second best record. Who knew? Time for the second best record. Again, man, it's been some tremendous basketball. I'm enjoying. Most teams I enjoy watching. Some teams I'm like, I can't get into. Blazers have dealt with injuries and they're young. I've caught a couple of their games. But they're young and they got injuries. I mean, they got a ton of injuries. But most teams, man, they just compete. And that's all a brother asks for is to compete, man. So, yeah, so those are your best teams in the NBA right now. I'll go Celtics in the East, Sixers, and then T-Wolves, Nuggets, OKC. Of course, everyone focuses on the Lakers. On another note, right, we talked about Sixers and the Harden trade. The Harden trade for the Clippers has been really not really that good to start off. Just what I predicted would happen has happened, right? Russ lost his place, right? Russell Westbrook is not a corner three shooter. If you're going to ask Russell Westbrook to stand in the corner and shoot threes, forget about it. That's the role he was trying to play with the Lakers, right? LeBron did his thing, and then he was like the outlet third, fourth option. Westbrook is not that guy. He started off the season pretty good, doing okay, shooting above 50%. And then Harden got there and his field goal percentage dropped, plummeted. Because those two, although they played well in Houston, it was just them two. They would take turns. That's not the case here and with the Clippers. So you got Kawhi, you got PG, and you got Harden. Where would Westbrook have fit? So now he goes to Ty Lue and says, hey, let me come off the bench. He's coming off the bench. But now the starting unit is missing a component that Russ brought to them early on, which is somebody who's going to push the pace. Like when Russ is in the game, you know he's going hard all the time. He pushed the pace. Harden comes in the game, you know he's doing his little dribble up. He ain't conditioned like that. He's not wired like that. So it's going to be different. I don't want to, you know, say what's going to happen. I don't want to say, well, you know, they're not going to want to chip right now. I haven't seen enough. I want to see more of what they look like. But I know defensively, Harden ain't like that. And I know in tough postseason games, closeout games, Harden ain't like that. So you're going to have to account for that, Clippers. I don't want to count you out yet. I don't want to say the Clippers aren't championship material. But they're going to have to account for the fact that James Harden and big games in the playoffs doesn't come through. And they're going to have to account for the fact that James Harden, you know, they got him because they think he's a creator, but they're just looking at assist numbers. But James Harden is a ball stopper, meaning if the ball's moving, right, James Harden he's going to catch the ball and do his thing. He's not going to keep it moving. Not only that, the Clippers offense, there's very little motion. Most of these cats are ISO. Actually, the guys who touch the ball all the time are ISO guys. PG is an ISO scorer. Kawhi is an ISO scorer. So is James Harden. So all of these guys are ISO scores, and at some point, you need some chemistry, and you need the ball moving and popping. Like, you play a good defensive team, you might struggle if everybody's just going ISO. They know how to counter that. So we'll see. I don't want to make any predictions, no judgments right now. I just see them struggling, and I knew the Russ struggle would come. That's a fact, right? So one of them had to come off the bench. I would have preferred if they kept Russ starting because, he, like I said, he pushes the pace. His energy is there. You could see the energy when he's on the court. Even coming off the bench, you could see the energy. Versus James Harden, who's, you know, no one is going to accuse James Harden of injecting any kind of life into an offense and any kind of energy on the court. So we'll see. Charles Barkley always talks about, you know, anybody can be good with the ball. But the great players are good without the ball. To be great, you have to be good without the ball, moving without the ball. And frankly, that's not James Harden's forte right now. He comes down the court, he does his thing, or he passes the ball and he stands there. He ain't doing much cutting. So their offense gets stagnant. So that's my beef with them. They'll win games. They'll gel. They'll win some games, but I want to see more of them to see what they look like to before I make a prediction of what they'll look like in the playoffs. Because right now, they look meh. All right? They look like, here's what they look like. All right? They look like when me and the boys get together, right? Me and the boys, all my age, get together and we're at LA Fitness. We can still play, but we can't keep up with the youngsters. And right now, this is the band getting back together. All right? It looks like a bunch of dudes getting back together, older dudes. They can still play. But when it matters, can they keep up with the younger teams with more chemistry? I don't know. So we'll see. So I'm gonna hold off on that. Let's move on. All right, new segment. All right? I want to do this, you know, every once in a while, new segment. I'm gonna call it "While You Were Watching LeBron," because the media, that's all they focus on, right? The Lakers, right? That's all they talk about. Lakers, the bigger teams, bigger market teams, LeBron. So I'm gonna call this segment "While You Were Watching LeBron," while you were watching LeBron and what you missed out. The Detroit Pistons have the worst record in the league, all right? Or one of the worst, tied for the worst record, I think, right? They've lost like 12, 13 straight games. The Detroit Pistons have a really, really good core that's going to be coming for some heads in the next couple of years. Y'all can bookmark that right now, all right? They're a young team. They've lost 12, 13 games in a row or something like that. They're dealing with some injuries. But their young core is legit. And if they add a couple pieces, that team's going to be a problem. And if you ain't been watching, you need to, right? I know they're Detroit. They're not big market. That team is going to be a problem in a couple years. Let me tell you why. They got a scorer, a true scorer, Cade Cunningham. You know Cade Cunningham. First pick in the draft a couple years ago. Cade Cunningham is truly an unstoppable scorer. He's an unstoppable force, and it's smooth as hell. Right now, he's averaging 23-7, 23.7 assists. Like, this cat, you can't really stop him. His jump shot is wet. He can handle, gets to the rim, finishes. He's smooth as hell. He reminds me of, like, Grant Hill, a combination of, like, Grant Hill and Brandon Roy in his style. Y'all remember Brandon Roy? Got hurt, knee injury. Like, just smooth. Like, you're not going to rush him. Like, he's patient with it. His jump shot is wet. So, Grant Hill, for those who remember Grant Hill, like, used to come down the court. Although he was athletic as hell, come down the court, put you to sleep, and then that quick crossover, left to right, right to left. Next thing you know, he's dunking on you. Now, Cade Cunningham's not as athletic as Grant. Right? But his game is just like that. It's smooth as hell, man. Like, he puts you to sleep and then boom, boom. Like, he's at the rim or he's shooting his J. Like, as he develops, man, yeah, he's going to be a major problem. Got that Brandon Roy J just wet. When I see him, that's like two guys that come to mind. Like, obviously, Grant Hill was in Detroit, so it was natural. But it was just the way Grant Hill used to just come down court, you know, put you to sleep, and then boom, boom, he's dunking on you. That's what I see, man. Kate Cunningham is just, he's nice, man. He's young, so he turns the ball over. I'm hoping he gets better with that. Starts playing defense. None of these young guys play defense, but I hope he gets better with defense. They got another guy, a big man, Jalen Duren. Again, these guys you probably never heard of. Watch the Pistons, man. Jalen Duren, he's been hurt, but he was averaging 13 and 11. This guy reminds me. I don't know if you guys, old heads, remember Kevin Willis, man. Kevin Willis was like this muscled up cat, played for the Hawks for a long time. Kevin Willis, and looking back at doing some of the research on this, Kevin Willis like had a pretty big time peak. Like his peak, 91, 92 season through 94, 95 season. This cat averaged 18 points, 13 boards. Average. Yeah, people don't remember Kevin Willis being like that, but he was like that. And Jalen Duren, people want to say he's the modern-day Ben Wallace, obviously, with the Detroit ties. I think he's more like Kevin Willis. Like, he's tall, long, athletic, muscled up, got some game. Like, he's not just out here catching lobs. And like, he got some game around the rim. Like, he can hoop. So, if I'm telling you, if you're not watching the Pistons, Jalen Duren. So, they got the scorer. All right, ball handler score. They got Jalen Duren, the big man, who's going to be an unstoppable force as he gets better footwork and all that. I'm projecting, of course. And they got this kid, Osar Thompson. You may know him if you watch the NBA draft. He has a twin brother called Amen Thompson, played for the Rockets, who's hurt right now. But Osar Thompson, man, he's one of those guys. He's averaging 11 and 10 right now. Crazy. Defense is excellent for a young guy. He does it all, right? He moves without the ball. He defends. Like, he's like the perfect basketball player. Whoever coached Osar Thompson, youth development, like, coming up, major props to you, man. Major props to whoever coached Osar Thompson growing up, because he is the perfect basketball player, somebody you want to play with. He's not out here just needing the ball all the time. He reminds me of, you know, Andre Iguodala, Scottie Pippen type cats who are just smart, high IQ basketball players. Like I said, he defends, great off-ball cuts. Like, if you need him to handle, he can handle. Like, he's going to be probably averaging like 15, 18 points a game in his career, 8, 9 rebounds. And he's going to be one of those guys, you know, a starter on a championship team. You know, people be like, he's not that good. You know, he didn't do that much, right? People don't give Iggy that much credit, right? People downplay Scottie Pippen's career because he didn't average 25 points a game. But guys like that are so important. And I could see Osar Thompson becoming that for the Pistons, man. Like, he's like, I think, 6'9". Defends the hell out of the basketball. Hustles, plays hard. He's blocking shots. This kid's all over the place on defense, man. Again, whoever coached this guy up, coming up, kudos to you. Shout out. You didn't neglect defense. You didn't neglect him moving off ball. He's not just ISO scoring. Like, this kid's the truth, man. So that's the third piece. They got the scorer. They got one big man. They got a wing defender in Osar Thompson. Jaden Ivey, the point guard, was actually coming off the bench. Not sure why earlier in the season, but last year, I thought he was great. I thought he was tremendous. But he's quick as hell with the ball in his hands. You can't stop him from getting to the paint. I want to see how it goes with the season, if he's going to continue to be a starter. Last game I watched, he was a starter. I want to see how it continues with him. But he's a lead guard. He can be a lead guard. Just needs to take care of the ball. I don't know why Monty had him coming off the bench. Another big man they got is Isaiah Stewart. You may remember Isaiah Stewart as the guy who tried to kill LeBron a couple years ago. He was going after LeBron, averaging 12 and 8. He came in, he was just a rebounder, tough guy. Now he has a jump shot. You can't leave him booty open at the three-ball line. He'll make a tray ball. Like, he can bring the ball up court. Like, he's truly worked on his game, and he's developed. So I guess he's not playing power forward for them. So they got two legit big men. Two legit big men, an all-world scorer, a perimeter wing defender, like a point guard who you can't stop from getting into the paint. They got a squad coming up, man. If they develop and grow together, watch out for the Detroit Pistons. That's all I want to say, all right? I know it doesn't look great right now. They got a garbage record. But that team can stay together. They can continue to build, add a few more pieces. They're going to be scary, man. And this NBA, they got the defense. They got the scoring. Watch out. So that's what I wanted to bring your attention to. While everybody else is watching LeBron, y'all need to go watch the Detroit Pistons. Young team, they make mistakes. But look, think forward. That team's going to be a problem, in my opinion. So that's it for the NBA. Let's move on to the NFL. I guess the Eagles are the best team in the league right now. I guessed. Best record, only one loss. Man, I don't know what to say. They beat the Chiefs. They didn't look that great. And even with not looking that great, so here's the problem with the NFL, and I'm going to dive into this, all right? Why is Jalen Hurts leading the MVP race? Like, Vegas has him projected, like, best odds to win MVP. Jalen Hurts is not doing much. He had a not so great game the other day against Kansas City. But hey, he's a quarterback on the best team. I can't stand that. But honestly, and I've said it all year, there are no teams distinguishing themselves. What I do know is that the Chiefs are struggling. And I don't know if it's the lack of receiver weapons. I don't know if it's Eric Bieniemy, but the Chiefs are struggling. Even against teams that aren't that great. Their offense is sus. And people are now saying, you know what, well, Patrick Mahomes doesn't have any wide receiver weapons and they're dropping passes. Other cats don't be having those weapons, man. That's all I'm saying. Other cats. Other QBs didn't have all those weapons. That's what happens when you're paying so much money for the QB. So now they're going to have to find wide receiver weapons. Kelce is still Kelce, but the other day, Philly was like, we're going to double team this cat. The other people got to catch the ball. And they didn't look that great. And the game before that, they didn't look that great. So the Chiefs got problems. I'm not going to sit here and say they're not going to win the Super Bowl. They're not a contender because we saw last year what they did, right? Anything can happen with these guys. Mahomes is Mahomes. Andy Reid somehow comes up with the answers to help this guy out. But I guess the Eagles are the best team. There's not much analysis. I don't like saying that. But I don't know who else to put as the best team. Buffalo? I don't know. I really don't know, y'all. Everybody right now is like, meh, good days, bad days. I guess San Fran, when they're healthy, is probably like a legit threat. Right? Because we saw what Brock Purdy was like when he didn't have his guns. Duh. He looked mid. He looked average. But with the boys back in town, the game back together, he looks really good again. Funny how that works. So let's go to this topic. Probably my favorite topic. You guys have heard me talk about this 101 times on this podcast. One of the topics that came out of last week, right, is Josh Allen. And Josh Allen is elite, whether he's elite or not elite, and, you know, people taking sides. And, you know, of course, Bills fans get mad when you say their QB is not elite. Here's my thoughts on Josh Allen. Is he elite? Is he elite? I don't know, because he throws a lot of damn picks. He makes a lot of great plays. He throws a lot of touchdowns. He runs for touchdowns, right? He's a bull. He's spectacular. He's great to watch. He's a great QB. Josh Allen is a great QB, right? Anybody who says otherwise is lying. All right? Josh Allen is a great QB. Is he elite? I don't know. If somebody wants to say Josh Allen's elite, I'm not going to argue with them. But for me, he throws a lot of picks, and I would like to see him clean that up. All right? A lot of turnovers. Sometimes at really crucial times. But if somebody says, hey, Josh Allen is elite, here's why, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, fight over it. All right? But here's my problem with the elite, non-elite conversation. Because Josh Allen has proven he's won games regular season. He could be better in the playoffs, but still in all, great QB. All right? Super talented. Again, cut down the turnovers. But here's the problem with the elite, non-elite conversation, man. There is no consistency into how we determine what's an elite quarterback. And I've said it before on this podcast. All right? Pretty much elite quarterbacks to the general public, to fans, and to a lot of people in the media, who they consider elite is really who they like to watch, who for whatever reason they have an affinity for, right? Highlight throws. Right, throwing off your back foot 70 yards, Justin Herbert. Whether it's a lot of fantasy points, the truth is that's how a lot of people determine what an elite quarterback is or who is an elite quarterback. That's what they're basing it on. Because some of the stuff they say that mid quarterbacks, you know, need or are, apply to the elite quarterbacks too when they want it to. Right? So the same thing they'll say for a game manager, well, a game manager can't do this, can't do that, is the same excuses that they end up using for their favorite elite quarterback. Right? They'll say, well, the game manager needs a perfect defense. You got to have everything perfect around them, a great defense, great O-line, great receivers. But then as soon as their so-called elite quarterback has a bad game, they want to say, oh, he doesn't have any receivers. His receivers aren't getting open. Josh Allen has a bad game. Oh, it's all Ken Dorsey's fault. Like, why can't we just be consistent and just say, Josh Allen had a bad game? Why do we make excuses for elite quarterbacks as if it can't never be their fault? So, yeah, Josh is great. But he makes the same mistakes that other non-so-called elite quarterbacks make. And we don't give those guys the benefit of the doubt. We don't make excuses for those guys. So we don't, for those guys, because they're not throwing off their back foot 70 yards and running people over, those guys, we don't get to say, oh, their O-line is trash. That's why they look bad. No, they're just mid. So we blame coaches for guys who we want to be elite, guys who we like. The media does this all the time. The guys they like, they make excuses for. And they break down film and break down tape to the nth degree, trying to make excuses for their favorite elite quarterbacks, even when they're losing. So somebody like Justin Herbert gets excuses made for him all the time, so people can call him elite. But the so-called mid guys, when they lose, they don't get those excuses. They don't get the excuse that their coach is not that good. But Justin Herbert, because he can throw lasers 80 yards downfield on a rope, he gets the excuse that his coach is not that good. When there's a lot of games where you can't just blame the coach. Justin Herbert just didn't come through. Right now, Justin Herbert sits with a sub-500 record. Is all that on the coaches? Or is it that sometimes Justin Herbert doesn't come through when he needs to? But he's elite because he makes fancy throws. It ain't just Justin Herbert, but he's an example that in the media, for most media and most fans, is really who we like watching and who we, for whatever reason, have an affinity for. I don't know. They got nice hair, Trevor Lawrence. So we'll say the mid-quarterbacks, right? You'll hear it, the mid-quarterback. You can never win a Super Bowl with the mid-quarterback because you need a great O-line and you need great receivers. Any great coaching? Come on, man. The same excuses are made for these elite guys when things don't go their way. When they don't win games, people go to the umpteenth degree to say why they didn't win the game. Oh, Patrick Mahomes' receivers are dropping passes. Well, mid-quarterbacks' receivers drop passes too. They're usually playing with bad receivers. They don't get that excuse. Oh, the O-line's not blocking. Well, the O-line don't be blocking for mid-receivers either. Right? You people tell me, right? All I hear is that elite quarterbacks elevate the team, right? When the O-line's not blocking, they buy time. They throw receivers open when they don't get open. One of the things that get on my nerves the most is when people try to sit there and say, you know, elite quarterbacks throw receivers open. No, not really. Not really. If that was the case, then they would have like 100% passing percentage. But that's all you hear, right? When a guy that's not as liked, when it's not on that up a tier of so-called elite quarterbacks, right? When you say, hey, this guy doesn't have any receivers, his receivers aren't getting any separation, what you'll hear fans and media say is elite quarterbacks throw receivers open. But when the elite quarterback has receivers, you know, who ain't catching the ball or for what other excuses, right, their line ain't blocking you, you'll see them, oh, let's go break down the tape. The tape says that nobody's getting open. They're not catching. So the mid quarterback is expected to elevate everyone and go above and beyond, but the elite quarterback is not, just get excuses made for them. What the hell is that? So all I ask for is some consistency into what's elite and what's mid. That's all I'm looking for. All right? So if you're going to call Justin Herbert elite, check this. Y'all got to check this out. Here's the problem. Justin Herbert is called elite. 19 touchdowns this year, 5 picks. All right, 2,609 yards. 71.6 QBR, right, if you care about analytics, advanced analytics, PFF grade of 77.8. He's elite. Dak Prescott is mid. 19 touchdowns, 6 picks, 2,604 yards, 73.8 QBR, 87.6 PFF grade. Herbert is elite. Why? Because he makes fancy passes. That's the only difference, bro. Tell me I'm wrong. That's the only difference. Herbert makes fancy passes, so people assume that he's better than Dak. He's elite, and Dak isn't. And I'm not sitting here to tell you, like I'm a Cowboys fan and tell you that Dak is some elite quarterback. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, what is the difference between Herbert, who right now, team record is not great, and Dak, who puts up the same stats on a winning team? It's guys we like. Fancy passes. People ain't going to admit it. Media and fans ain't going to admit it. They're going to act like they're so detailed and here's what makes an elite quarterback. Here, be honest with yourself. You like Justin Herbert because he makes fancy passes. What about this one? Elite. Trevor Lawrence. People were ready to crown this dude, crown Trevor Lawrence, elite. People still crowning him, talking about Trevor Lawrence is an elite quarterback, one of the elite quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence has 11 touchdowns this year, 6 INTs, 2,382 yards. QBR, 60, 82.7 PFF grade, 13 total TDs, 10 turnovers. That's Trevor Lawrence. He's considered elite by some in the media and some fans. Lamar Jackson has 12 touchdowns, 5 picks, 2,177 yards passing, 62.1 QBR, 87.5 PFF grade, 17 total touchdowns, 11 turnovers. He's mid. That, I'm telling you, the difference in elite and mid, people aren't going to admit it, but it's simple. The guys who make fancy throws, the guys who people just like, right? They just have an affinity for, a bias. That's the truth of the matter is, that's who is in this elite conversation, in this elite category. Because Justin Herbert is no more elite than Dak Prescott. He just makes fancier throws. He ain't leading his team to a bunch of victories. Yeah, there's been a few games where his receivers let him down. Every quarterback goes through that. And other quarterbacks don't get that benefit of the doubt. Trevor Lawrence was never and is not better than Lamar Jackson. But he's considered elite and an up-and-comer and ready to go for the crown. Somebody calls him the prince. He's mid as hell. And I like Trevor Lawrence. I like them, like I said, I've been like them coming out of Clemson. But right now, Trevor Lawrence is just a middle-of-the-pack quarterback in the NFL. Here's some stats on Trevor Lawrence, for those who don't believe me, all right? Trevor Lawrence received all this praise. Trevor Lawrence received all this praise after his second year, all right? People was like, oh, man, he's elite. Trevor Lawrence is elite. In year two, Trevor Lawrence threw 25 touchdowns at 8 picks, 4,113 yards, 17 games. Check this out. Kirk Cousins, first full year starting was year three. Threw 29 touchdowns, 11 picks, 4,166 yards, 16 games. No one ever called Kirk Cousins elite. Kirk Cousins has never been called elite in his life. But in his first year starting, which was year three, taking over for RG3, 4,166 throwing yards, 0.9 touchdowns, 11 picks. Let's go further. Ryan Tannehill. No one's ever called Ryan Tannehill elite in year three, right? Year three, Ryan Tannehill threw 27 touchdowns, 12 picks, 4,045 yards, and 16 games. Anyone ever call Ryan Tannehill elite? So what separates, why does Trevor Lawrence get called elite after a second year when he put up similar stats to Kirk Cousins and Ryan Tannehill? Why does he get called elite? And those guys were just mid. Like, what is it about Trevor Lawrence that's make people calling him elite? Truth is nothing, but people just like him. And that's what it is. If people like you, media likes you, fans like you, they're going to prop you up to a status, man, to that elite status. Josh Allen is elite, 57-30 career record, right? So I'm bagging on the fans, right? The fans put these guys in statuses that they probably shouldn't be at, but the media does it too. So-called reputable, trustworthy media does it too. You know how I know? Check out the preseason rankings for quarterbacks. Josh Allen is elite, right? He was number 4 in the NFL.com preseason rankings, career record 57-30. He was ranked 4th. Okay, that's fine. Justin Herbert was ranked 5th, 29-30 career record. Justin Herbert, 5th in preseason QB rankings, NFL.com, the league's website. Trevor Lawrence was ranked 7th, NFL.com, the league's website, 18-25 career record, right? So you would think all these guys, you know, elite, elite, elite. They were all ranked above Lamar Jackson, who won MVP before his first full season starting, 56-24 career record. He was ranked 9th. So Lamar Jackson, a baller who wins games and does what he needs to do to win games, is ranked below Justin Herbert, sub-500 career winning record. Trevor Lawrence, sub-500 career record. Lamar Jackson has 56-24 career record. Josh Allen has a 57-30 career record. One guy is elite, one guy isn't. And I'm telling you, nobody's going to admit this, but the reason for why we consider it elite, one's elite and one's not, is just we just like their style of play. One has a cannon arm. They can make throws down the field off their back foot. That's the only differentiator, man. Lie to yourself all you want. Dak Prescott, who has a 68-39 career record, was ranked 10th preseason NFL.com rankings. So you could break down all the tape you want, right? Do all this thing, look at advanced analytics. I'm telling you, if you stop lying to yourself, the people we call elite, and that's fans and media, is the people we just like. We just like how they play. We just like them personally for whatever reason. Simple as that. Because we make excuses for all of them when things go wrong. The same things that we bash the so-called mid-quarterbacks for are the same excuses we give to the people we call elite. Oh, their play calling was terrible. Oh, their coach is terrible. So now Staley is not a good coach, and I'm not saying he's a good coach, but fans just want to bang on Staley and say, hey, he needs to be fired. But mid-quarterbacks are supposed to work with trash coaches and elevate them. So Ryan Tannehill was expected to have a great record in Miami playing for two of the worst coaches ever. Joe Philbin, Adam Gase. He was mid. He was considered mid. Ryan Tannehill was never given the benefit of the doubt in Miami playing for garbage coaches. But for whatever reason, Justin Herbert's given the benefit of the doubt because Staley is supposedly not a great coach. Why? Because he makes fancy throws. Lie to yourself all you want and bring up all these other stats and what he does. Nah. He's more aesthetically pleasing. He throws 80 yards off his back foot. I know some people want to say, well, it's, you know, potentially racism, you know. Listen, it's United States of America. Race is always a factor. Personally, I think it's stupider than that. Okay? I think the reasons that some are elite, considered elite, and some are not is stupider than race. It's just what people like, man. Who you like to watch. Does this guy throw the ball 100 yards down the field? Oh, he's elite. Whether or not he's winning games. Right? People on TV made excuses for Matt Stafford having a terrible career record. Matt Stafford. People make excuses for this guy. Calling him elite. Why? Because he was pretty fun to watch. He made no-look passes, no-look throws. Had a cannon. You're not going to admit that, media. I ain't going to hold you to it. You're not going to admit it, fans. But if you were to tell the truth, you would admit, not all media, right? Not all media. But if most media and fans would tell the truth, the guys they consider elite, there is no rhyme or reason, right? Josh Allen can't be elite, and Justin Herbert can't be elite, and Trevor Lawrence can't be elite, but Dak is considered mid. Or some guy, well, everything has to be perfect around them. You know, he'll get you to the playoff, but he can't win a Super Bowl. How? How do you put Dak Prescott in the mid category, but Justin Herbert in the elite category? How do you put Lamar Jackson, the former MVP, in the mid category, but you put Trevor Lawrence in the elite category? How do you do that? You just like these guys. You like watching them. You like their style. You like their hair. Admit it, because it's the damn truth. It's the damn truth. There is no rhyme or reason. Some guys get all the excuses. Some guys get called mid. That's all it is, man. Ain't nobody going to break down tape to show it, make excuses for Kirk Cousins. Nobody going to break down tape to make excuses for Ryan Tannehill when he was starting with the Titans as to why he was struggling. But you want me to believe that you're not biased, media? No thanks. I'm good. Media and fans just alike. You like who you like, and you make excuses for them. Point blank, period. All right, I'm off that soapbox. Injuries suck, man. And that's football, I know it is, but injuries suck. Joe Burrow's the latest to get injured. Kirk Cousins, y'all know about his injury, gone for the year. Injured last week as well. So the hip drop tackle is now in the news. All over, you know, people like, should the NFL ban the hip drop tackle? And, you know, former players are like, I don't even know what that is. It's just a tackle. We're trying to get a guy to the ground. And when I watch it, it's pretty much if a guy is running away from you, right? You're trying to grab him. And I never played football in the NFL, college, or high school. I'm not trying to get hit. I'm not trying to get hurt. Sorry. But it looks like you're trying to grab a guy from behind and you got to drop your weight to bring him down or else he's going to drag you. You're going along for the ride. Now, two things can happen. Either the offensive player can protect themselves and stop running and just go down, or they're going to keep pushing their feet, right? They're not going to stop. They're going to keep going. And if that tackle happens at an inopportune time, you're going to land on their back of their leg. You're going to sprain their ankle, break their leg, right? Something bad's going to happen. It's like the horse collar. And now people are calling for that tackle to be outlawed. And defensive players are like, man, you can't do that. How are we going to tackle these big dudes from the behind like that? You're just going to go along for the ride, piggyback ride, which I feel. So people are calling Logan Wilson from the Bengals because their game was, you know, on national TV, and two people got basically got hurt because of this tackle, Mark Andrews and Lamar Jackson, pretty much. And my question is, I'm not, I never played football in the NFL, right? My question is, I've said before, I want the NFL to get, you know, more conservative as it relates to head injuries, but I don't know where I stand with tackles and these kinds of injuries because honestly, it's football. The point is to get the guy down. How do you get the guy down? As long as you're not targeting heads, bumping heads, right? You know, targeting, how else are you supposed to get a guy down? But here's another question. Should NFL, are NFL players responsible for each other's health? Right? Should NFL players, should a linebacker, a safety, or whoever, like, look out for another player's health? And that conversation came up actually when Nick Chubb had his nasty injury early in the year. And there was offensive and defensive players saying, man, you the guy's already wrapped up. Don't go low and this and that, right? Like, but is it the responsibility of the defensive player to make sure you come out of this play healthy? Or is it their responsibility to get you down? Of course there are dirty players. There are dirty defensive players, just like there are dirty offensive players and linemen who go for your knees on blocks and things like that. But for the guys who aren't dirty, is it their responsibility? Is it defensive players' responsibility to keep you healthy for the next play? Or is it their responsibility to bring you down? Because if you drag them to the end zone, who knows what happens? They get benched, they get cut, they lose money too. Of course, if the NFL, you know, makes that a rule, makes it illegal to make that tackle, like, things are going to change. So is it, as a defensive player, is it my responsibility to protect you, the offense player, or to bring you down? You, the offense player, are you responsible for yourself to make sure you make it to the next play? Meaning, the quarterback should not throw the ball over the middle and throw medicine balls. Or hospital balls, as they call it. The quarterback should not be throwing hospital balls over the middle. It's on the offense to protect itself from the defense trying to make a tackle, trying to make a play. So I understand both sides. But in this instance, I feel like I side with the defense because if you're running away from me and you're big as hell and I'm trying to bring you down, how else am I supposed to do it besides dropping my weight? And sometimes, if you're still trying to push forward, I'm probably going to land on your ankle. Ryan Tannehill got hurt like that. Mark Andrews, I'm going to land on your fibula, break your leg. Debo got hurt like that last year. Debo Samuel of the Niners. So on this one, on the hip drop tackle thing, I think I'm going to side with the defense. You want to talk about targeting and people using their helmet to helmet, this and that? I'm going to side with the league and say, hey, let's take that out. We don't want more concussions. We're trying to protect people's heads. That's fair. But as far as tackling, like, as an offensive player, you have to make the choice. Do I want these 2 yards bad enough? Or do I want to live to see another play? That's just the way it is, man. It's unfortunate. Injuries suck, but that's just the way it is. But that really leads me to my last topic I want to cover on today, which is, for those who are new here, the podcast is called Sports and the Real Shit. This is, you know, every couple episodes, I want to talk about some stuff. So this is the real shit portion of the episode. Sports is great, man, because it teaches us a lot of life lessons. Ups and downs. It's emotional. How do you deal with losing and winning? team sports teaches you that you can't win alone. The NFL is probably the most, I would say, lifelike sport in that it's truly a team sport. You don't do things alone. But most importantly, the NFL is the one sport where everything can be going fine, and then all of a sudden, bang, it's gone. Everything changes. Your world comes crashing down. We're talking about injuries, right? NFL is the one place where everything is going great. Winning streak, you're looking good, and then bang, your quarterback's injured. Joe Burrow. Cincinnati season is over. The Bengals season is over. Aaron Rodgers barely played a minute. The Jets season was over at that point. Nick Chubb got hurt, and then Deshaun Watson gets hurt. The Browns season is over. Kirk Cousins gets hurt for the Vikings. Their season is over. They were doing pretty good, you know. Started off slowly and then started doing pretty good. Their season's over. Josh Dobbs is balling, but their season's over. Mark Andrews, big-time weapon for the Ravens. Thank God they still got Lamar. His injury wasn't serious. But that's going to impact their season. If we're talking about college, my Seminoles, I'm talking about hip drop tackle, that snapped, nasty injury, snapped Jordan Travis's leg. So the Seminoles, who are undefeated, 10 wins, ready to go to college football playoffs, season's pretty much over. Jordan Travis is out. His career, college career is done, man. And that had me thinking. Again, the real shit, the real stuff, right, in life. Life can change at any point, man. So there's this book I had to read in college, and I didn't read too many books. High school, college, I didn't read too many books. But this book I actually read because it was small. It was a quick read. And it was interesting. The book was called Who Moved My Cheese? And if you have never read Who Moved My Cheese, you should. It's about, the concept is simple, right? It's about two mice and two midgets. I shouldn't say midgets. Two little people, right? They're in this maze, and there's this cheese. And it's eventually, the point is, the cheese, right? These mice and these little people, right? Their reasons for wanting the cheese is different, right? The mice obviously survive off of it. The little people, you know, have their reasons for wanting the cheese. But who, the cheese gets moved. Just like in life, your cheese can get moved, man. Things change. As an NFL team, things change. Now, NFL teams try to build as much as possible. They try to build as much depth as possible so that, you know, when somebody does get hurt, they have a suitable replacement. But in the NFL, you can't replace your starting quarterback. Like, the drop-off is always going to be a lot from QB1 to QB2. So the Bengals, somebody moved their cheese. For the Seminoles, somebody moved their cheese. In life, for us, our cheese gets moved a lot. Change happens. How do we adapt to change? COVID happens. Everything's going good, and then COVID happens, and then a recession. Who moved the cheese, man, at work? You're doing good, and then you got to get laid off because a recession or whatever. Your manager don't like it, whatever it is. Departments get shrunk. Funding gets cut. Your hours get cut back. Or you thought you were in line for a promotion, for a position, and then somebody else gets that position. Who moved my cheese, man? And humans don't like change. But unfortunately, change is the only constant in life, and change happens all the time. So as I'm thinking about the NFL and how, you know, one injury and your season is gone, and all this hard work cats have put in since June, July, you know, in the offseason preparing for all of this, for the Bengals, their season is done. They're not going anywhere. The Vikings, it's a wrap. The Chiefs are one Patrick Mahomes injury away, and it's a wrap. So in life, we have to always expect change. Change is constant. The only constant in life is change. They say taxes and death. But change is the one constant, and we have to be ready for someone, for our cheese to always move, man. So I was reading about the book and remembering, you know, what the lessons learned in that book, and, you know, online, doing some research online and getting my thoughts together about this. I'm like, man, football is like the perfect example of what life is. Change happens consistently, constantly, and it can happen at any time. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the fact that change is going to happen all the time? At the drop of a hat, things can change. First step is to prepare for change and know that change is always around the corner. Somebody, your cheese is always about to be moved, man. Somebody, something's going to happen where your cheese is gone. Your money is gone. Your source of income is gone. Something's always going to happen to where something, to where your cheese moves. And what are you going to do about it? What did the mice do about it? You guys got to go read that book. So prepare for change and accept change. Like I said, humans naturally don't like change. If you ever try to, you know, go through change at work, you know, help people go through a process change at work or wherever, people don't like change. Even if what they were doing before, how they were doing it before sucks, they don't want to change. They prefer to stay in their ways. So prepare for change, accept change. Number two, let go of the past. Change happens. Hey, let go. Move on to the next thing. COVID happens. Layoff happens. Let's go. Of course, there's going to be time. Sometimes you got to, you know, take some time to think about it. And, you know, you probably might be feeling bad for a little bit. Get up, dust yourself off, and let's go. So let go of the past. Be ready to adapt. All right? Environment changes. All right, cool. I'm on to the next. It's tough in the NFL, like I said, because you can't replace your quarterback like that. But other teams, the best teams and organizations build that depth. So that even though the quarterback may be injured, it's not as bad, right? Your season's over. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback. Probably not. But the rest of the team can hang in there and still make the season a success, all things considered. So be ready to adapt and understand that better things can come from change. Change is not always bad. Sometimes getting fired propels you to greater things. Not getting that promotion can help you to see differently and help you make moves so that not only are you better prepared for the next promotion, but maybe you make a move so that you get just a better job and better position overall. Or it motivates you more. So better things can come from your cheese moving, somebody taking your cheese away. So those are the four lessons I want to leave y'all with. When life moves your cheese, when the injury happens, which is inevitable in football, football is 100% injury rate. You just don't know who it's going to happen to. But when your starting quarterback gets hurt, when you don't get the money you deserve, when the cheese gets moved, be ready to accept it. Prepare for change. Accept it. Let go of the past. Be ready to adapt. And know that better things can come with the right mindset. Better things can come when change happens. When the cheese gets taken away. Go read that book, Who Moved My Cheese? Quick read. Highly recommend it. All right, y'all. I'm going to leave y'all there. Appreciate y'all hanging out with me once again. Football continues, basketball continues, best time of the year. Catch you guys next time, though. Sports in the real Mike Feldman. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.